to the fourth case, Georges versus the INS. Mr. Iruka?
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Babatunde Irukara. I am for the petitioner. Your Honor, this case is brought before you based on an appeal of the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals. The immigration judge had denied asylum to the petitioner, and the Board of Immigration Appeals had affirmed the decision of the immigration judge without opinion. Now, I'll start off by discussing a little of the facts. It is uncontroverted that there's significant evidence on the record that the petitioner did engage in political activities in her home country, Ethiopia. The asylum application did mention that, and her testimony was somewhat consistent on that. Now that takes me next to the standard of review. The standard of review for the Board of Immigration Appeals is a substantial evidence standard. They have a de novo duty to review. The notice of appeal and the appeal brief that was filed to the Board of Immigration Appeals clearly suggested that there were significant issues of due process here, and that the petitioner did not have a full opportunity to explore her case. There were certain documents that had not been submitted because the originals were in the custody of the Immigration Service. Now, the response by the government clearly shows that, well, the Board of Immigration Appeals could have entered their decision without opinion based on HCFR 317. And that is also incorrect, because the standard created in that regulation somewhat takes us in circles. The standard says that if a single panel member is convinced that the decision of the immigration judge was correct, and whether it was correct or not, whatever his considerations were, would be harmless error, or if there was if it was an issue controlled by existing authority or does not raise any new substantial legal or novel fact. And to me, I don't see how he could have made that decision without looking at the merits of the case. Here, the petitioner is claiming that her inability to fully explore her case resulted in a due process violation. The immigration judge also made specific findings of credibility, and that's the basis of error in this case. The record shows that the petitioner did explain the issues of incredibility as the immigration judge perceived it, which is actually what the process requires. Now, what the government has done in their response is to actually try to argue the case on the merit by trying to identify each of the issues that the immigration judge was concerned about, when the record really doesn't show.
What was the grounds for the refusal to admit the evidence at trial, the letter?
Well, there was one letter, and the judge indicated that because it was not certified and it was not did not comply with local rules by being timely filed and being served upon the INS. Now, that was
the government raised that objection, and the IJ did that on his. She agreed to that, or
it wasn't. It doesn't appear to have been an objection that was raised by the government. It was a IJ making a determination of the admissibility of the evidence on his own motion. And
what local rule was being invoked?
Well, the local rule would be the rule that says that this should have been filed as part of a pre-hearing statement and 10 days, at least 10 days before the hearing. It appeared that the letter had just come in, and the counsel at that time tried to tender it before the court.
Is it an immigration rule, or what?
It's a local immigration court rule, a local operating procedure rule.
And this was handled where? Here?
Yes, here in Chicago.
Chicago. Okay.
And Your Honor, there's no way that the government can seek to argue the merits of this case before this court. For the government to try and determine that there were six issues of discrepancies found by the immigration judge, and now to ultimately even agree that three of them seem to have been explained off in the brief of the petitioner, I think it's, I mean, that's something that should have been done either by the BIA or returned to the immigration judge to determine. I don't see how the government can expect the Court of Appeal to look at that and make a decision if, on the one hand, the government is saying that the duty of the Court of Appeal, if the Court of Appeal does not agree with its argument, is to remand this case back for additional hearing on the merits.
What about this disagreement or the difficulties connected with the Ethiopian calendar? Could you perhaps explain that to me? What the petitioner was trying to say?
Well, the petitioner obviously had a problem with the dates, because the Ethiopian calendar is completely different from the Western calendar.
How is it different?
And the Ethiopian calendar, 1 year in the regular calendar goes for about 7 years in the Ethiopian calendar.
I see.
It's 8 when it's a leap year. So because of that, both the months and the dates and the years are actually completely...
When one speaks in the native language, does the month come before the day, or the day come before the month?
No, the day would come before the month. Even though the same day and the same month and the same year will still not be the same.
So 16-190 would be the 16th day of the first month.
1990.
I understand.
Now, you know, 16-190 in Ethiopia would necessarily not be January 16, 1990 in the Western
calendar.
Wouldn't
be necessarily January 16th.
And that was an issue. Obviously, counsel in the case was American, had little understanding of the Ethiopian calendar, and you were dealing with the petitioner who had more understanding of the Ethiopian calendar than the Western calendar. The record does not show that the judge attempted to resolve this conflict. Instead, the judge arrived at a conclusion that these dates seem incorrect. It doesn't even question the facts that are raised by the letters or the facts that are raised by the evidence on those dates. The question is really, well, this date seems inconsistent. And even if it was, for the sake of argument, even if it was a Western calendar, I don't think that just the dates, the minor inconsistencies in dates, is fatal to the asylum application in itself. And we believe that the Board of Immigration Appeals should have taken these and looked at it on an issue-by-issue basis, and we don't have anything to go with. There was never anything other than the initial determination of the judge, so there's no way to determine that there was really a credibility issue, and that cannot be argued in this court. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. May?
May it please the court. My name is Anne Tumai. I represent the United States Attorney General. The court should deny the petition for review because, contrary to petitioner's claims, the board properly applied its regulation at 3.187.
How do we know that in streamlining? We just have to, because the board says it, right? So then that's the end of the inquiry under the new streamlining procedure.
Well, Your Honor, the government believes that the court's recent decision in Chiara v. Ashcroft is controlling with respect to that issue. It's the government's contention still that the court doesn't have jurisdiction to actually review whether or not the board properly applied the streamlining regulation. So, in effect,
we now, court appeals have easier jobs now, right?
Yes, sir. In effect, it's a 2-to-1 type of case where the court gets a chance to review the administrative decision, both of the board and the immigration judge.
What is the Court of Appeals judge to do in a streamlined case? We accept the fact that it's before us in a posture like this. That means that we don't look at it. We just know that the BIA has thoroughly reviewed the IJ. That's it, right? There's nothing more for us to do.
Your Honor,
except look at the IJ decision.
Yes, Your Honor, where there is an as-applied challenge.
Right.
And this is the case here.
Yes, right.
So the court merely takes a look at the administrative decision of the immigration judge.
Well,
let's
do that.
Yes, Your Honor.
It is a case that at least causes me some discomfort, like, for example, the calendar issue.
Yes, sir.
Wouldn't that cause you to have some discomfort, Ms. Mai?
Your Honor, as the government's brief indicates, there may be some impossible explanations which would make certain inconsistencies minor, but
The minor inconsistencies were, there's not much distinction between minor and major. Really, the IJ says these are the six areas, and they seem to be of varying weight to me. It's
for it.
Yes, Your Honor. But it is up to the trier of fact, the immigration judge, and he is in the best position to make a determination as to the individual's credibility. And the question that the court must look upon, the key question in this particular case, is whether the material omissions and inconsistencies in petitioner's testimony would compel a reasonable fact finder to find that she was credible. And the answer is can only be no. Under this court's case law...
Well, but credibility goes to dates, right? They don't go to events as much, do they?
Yes, they do, Your Honor. In fact, the most material omission, and the one that could even stand in and of itself, is the fact that she failed to mention in her application anything about her 1993 arrest, detention, abuse, and the murder of her uncle, which were supposedly based upon her political
belief. That's true. But she did have a letter attached, didn't she, from one of her daughters that was admitted into evidence
Yes, Your Honor.
Didn't that come with her application?
That was a letter that she did submit and that the immigration judge had afforded her an opportunity to submit.
Well, what did that letter speak to?
That letter spoke to events that had occurred since she had left Ethiopia. It spoke to the fact that the family did not know the location of her son and that the father had been in detention or that her particular experiences. But the problem, again, is looking at the whole record, there is the omission of the only events that actually directly involved petitioner, that being her abuse and detention and even the murder of her uncle, which are events that rise to a level that the immigration judge said might even constitute persecution. But she failed to explain that in her application. She failed to explain why she did not omit or that she omitted that information in her application. And her explanation, if the court's attention could be directed to the record at page 72, she said merely that I didn't count it as imprisonment. In my mind, what imprisonment? I thought that it's in a central prison for long terms and all that. She didn't mention the mistreatment while she was in prison because it is a short term and short time. I thought it was not much relevance for the case.
Well,
and
you know, thank God we're here discussing this case and not in a repressive regime, but is it so unreasonable to believe that short-term detention is just accepted in repressive situations, and the distinction between being incarcerated for months and years is something that someone would recognize as imprisonment. You know, the term imprisonment does, to a degree, speak to duration, although one could be certainly imprisoned for an hour or a day. But it's that kind of spin that the IJ puts on the testimony that can give me a little pause.
Yes, Your Honor. There is room for pause. There's room for sympathy, but that sympathy cannot be
is almost sympathy is mine in all cases. So I appreciate you might think that my questions are driven by that. That's a backdrop for all of them, but I try as much as I can to not have that seep into my analysis, either in writing or in questions. So I'm not really speaking to how sympathetic this is, because, my God, the vast majority of these cases carry that element with them, as I'm sure you're aware. What I'm troubled by is what seems to be an extremely technical approach by the IJ to arguably not precise references to events. But when you look at the brief, and it does in what record we have, it does seem to suggest she wasn't masking anything, you know.
Your Honor, she bears the burden of proof and the burden of persuasion. She also bears the risk that if there is any doubt as to her testimony, that testimony may be discounted, and it is her burden to also overcome any kind of doubt that the immigration judge may have. And the immigration judge did explain to her that there were inconsistencies, that there were problems, but to explain that, well, she, even though she acknowledged that she had been mistreated in 1993, her testimony does not explain why she did not mention that in her application. The application asked, were you ever mistreated? She acknowledges in her testimony that she did consider it mistreatment, but her only explanation really lends itself to a language problem. And this court stated in Mansour that language in and of itself is not sufficient an explanation. And when
does the record reflect whether she was counseled at that point? I understand it was counsel at the hearing, but on the petition application, do we know whether that was a counsel situation or not?
Your Honor, it indicates that she had submitted it herself. This was actually a defensive application that she submitted after the initial affirmative application. But once she was represented by counsel and submitted the application again in the immigration court, then she had an attorney and they could have submitted another application,
amended,
a corrected one. Yes,
petition.
And they never did. They sat on the original application itself. And
well, do you think that they were trying to augment it, albeit apparently late, with the documentation that was not allowed?
Well, Your Honor, they indicated that there were a series of documents or additional documents, and they claimed a due process violation, but it's difficult to see, especially in light of this court's decision, Shorba, because she doesn't establish any prejudice. She states in the plural that there were documents, but she doesn't identify all of them. The only document she identifies is the one that we could assume was identified, was the one that the IJ had excluded.
Now, that is your understanding the IJ, again, did that on the judge's own motion? The government wasn't objecting to that?
Your Honor, it looks like there was no objection raised by the government specifically that the judge, because the judge had pointed out earlier on in a prior hearing as well and reminded her petitioner and petitioner's counsel when they asked for additional time to submit documents that you must submit this prior to the hearing. There's a rule that it has to be 10 days. The petitioner's counsel recognized that, and yet they violated it, and they also did not apparently give the government service of the document, nor when submitting a copy did they give a translation.
The government apparently didn't seem too disadvantaged, though, if they didn't make an objection.
Your Honor, the immigration judge may have already stated what was not needed by the government. I see that my time is rather coming short, and what I would like to address is the other inconsistencies. It is because it is the whole entire record that this court must review in determining whether or not a reasonable person could find that the immigration judge was correct. And when looking at everything, the omissions and these inconsistencies, it would be the case. The petitioner was inconsistent, and there were discrepancies concerning the date. Now, although petitioner's counsel before the court has explained that there is a discrepancy of 7 years, and I appreciate that too because in reading the record it is confusing. Mm-hmm. But the confusion again in the record, which is what the court is limited to reviewing, petitioner's counsel and petitioner's own testimony seems to indicate some discrepancy. In the closing, petitioner's counsel references at page 81 that the calendar difference is 7 to 8 years. But when petitioner tries to explain the inconsistencies in the dates during her testimony, she seems to reference that it's only a few months of a different time period. For example, if she were to use that explanation for the date of her husband's arrest, she initially stated that it was October 1996. Later, she says January 1996. And she waffles between those dates and later recants. But that explanation of the 7 to 8 years does not explain a few months difference. I do see my time is up, if I may.
Well, I don't want you to cut off your thought. That if you have one, you may finish that thought.
My thought was, in essence, that if she's going to provide an explanation, that explanation must also be something that is consistent. Here she is explain inconsistencies and discrepancies with another inconsistency, and there are at least 6 of them. Whether or not the court finds that all of them are sufficient is not the question. It is whether or not a reasonable fact finder, in light of these inconsistencies and material omissions, would be compelled to find a contrary conclusion. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Nye. Mr. Rukara.
Your Honor, I think you made a very clear distinction as to what happened in this matter. Primarily, we should be before this court to determine the technicalities whereas what would have happened before the immigration judge should have been the fact-finding. But it appears that the immigration judge made his determination based on the technicality. And if we were going to be arguing the technicalities before you, I mean, then the decision itself couldn't stand. First, the question was, you said you were arrested during the trial of Professor Walders, whereas Professor Walders was convicted and so on this date. You didn't seem to have been arrested at that time. The technicality is that I didn't say I was arrested at his conviction. I was arrested during the trial. We've just discussed the issue of the dates also. Now, she clearly,
Could it be a situation where the IJ, though, felt there were so many inconsistencies that built to a question of credibility?
Your Honor, and that is why, just so that doesn't happen, the clear requirement is that the IJ identifies this issue for the basis of a finding of lack of credibility. If he was that, she didn't believe that she was credible, but her claim was not meritorious enough for a grant of asylum, it would be a different thing. But when your decision is going to be based on credibility, you have to identify the grounds. The IJ did not even identify 6 grounds. He just went ahead and said, I'm making my decision based on these reasons. We can only go with that. It's only the government that has now determined that there were 6 of them, and 3 of them are minor, 3 of them appear to be major. I don't understand how that could be a conclusion before this court. And the asylum form requires, the question is, have you ever been arrested, detained, interrogated, and imprisoned? And her question to that was no, because she thought arrest and imprisonment was a legitimate law enforcement function, not the manner of arrest that happened to her in Ethiopia. And if you would just take your mind into that environment and understand what could possibly happen there when people are picked up and arrested on a daily basis and people regard arrest as a legitimate law enforcement function, it's quite possible that she misunderstood it.
Is it your position that if the copy of the letter from the Ethiopian Transitional Government second police station had been admitted, that would have substantiated her story regarding her husband's arrest?
Absolutely, Your Honor, because the judge's conclusion is that even if I wasn't going to go with all this discrepancy, I don't find corroborating documentary evidence in the record to show that you were conducted these activities in Ethiopia and that your husband is in this situation.
Did counsel give any reason why they were late in the filing?
Your Honor, the record does not clearly show that. I do not know for sure why they were late, but I know that he did bring it with him to court, and the government did not raise an objection.
Well, did the counsel below make the argument that I just presented to you, that if this had been admitted, it would have corroborated the date of the husband's arrest?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. That was part of his total argument, saying that documents were excluded, that the document he submitted, and even some originals that were originally submitted to the asylum office. There's no way she was going to get copies of those ones if they were already with the asylum office. There's a process for transmitting this information from the asylum office to the court. If they didn't make it to the court's file, I don't think that should be resolved against the petitioner. Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.